B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. Seven-five, the Fanatic.
Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station.
We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show.
Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly, where Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like the opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Mike Missinelli Show, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. All right, it's a Tuesday show. I got some fun ideas to talk about today. And well, I'm intrigued by what Ian Desmond had to say about baseball. He's not going to play now, Major League Baseball. And he's not going to play because of the safety part of it, but also because he's not happy with Major League Baseball and their policies on African-American players these days. It's a really good subject. And I want to talk about it in a little bit. But let's go to, like, what's going on right now in America with the COVID virus and what we're going to do about these sports and how everything is going to supposedly come together. Now, little by little, baseball players feel a little ambivalent about coming back. So we're going to have a season, and we'll find out what the story is with how many players are going to play. And as it pertains to the Phillies, we didn't talk about this issue yesterday, but the catcher, JT Realmuto, has become an issue. Now, we can all sit here and go, okay, they should pay him the money. Like $23 million would break the bank for a catcher. They want to rate him on the same level as, say, a productive first baseman. And I, you know, if I'm an agent, I would probably do the same thing. The Phillies now are playing a little game. And I think it's interesting, the dynamics of this little game. The owners now, I think, are going back in time where they colluded, although they didn't collude, supposedly, to sign free agents. And so here's the excuse that they throw out now. Again, this is, depending on what your perspective is, owners, your pro owners, pro players, they go, we lost a ton of revenue this year. How in the world do you expect us now to pay top dollar for a free agent? In a perfect world, maybe we can afford $23 million. We can't afford it now. So I'll tell you what. Try yourself around the league, Mr. Agent, and see if there's anybody you think is going to pay you $23 million. And that's the Philly strategy. They're playing that kind of game. Now, I didn't think Middleton was that type of guy. But I guess if you look at both sides, to be fair, you go, okay, I get it. They lost a ton of revenue. They can't, like, break the bank for these players, especially a guy like JT Realmuto, and pay him $23 million because that's so out of whack. And they can claim, we don't have the funds to do that now. And I go, okay, it's what, a 4 to 6 year contract? So what's the story? Over the length of that time, you're going to cry poor for me? If I'm the agent, I think the agent's like, sell that up the street. Yeah, maybe in the first year, it'll be a hardship for you to break the bank to pay $23 million. It's not going to be after that. So now let's see the owners now coming back in. This is what we're talking about. Jason was saying, there's so, Jason Stark, when we had him on, there's so much more to go in baseball with collective bargaining and what they're going to do now. And, you know, the people that say baseball's dead, I don't know, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. If they're going to continue to play these games, maybe you're right about the future of the game where the owners are going to scrap with the players and then we're just going to get exhausted by the whole thing and we're going to give up. So, Tyrone, you looked at this situation. This looks like a kind of a collusion situation. Now, based on just one case.
Yep.
The reason they're saying, oh, things changed, it did, they'll say it didn't just change for us. It changed for everybody. No one has any money anymore. Mm-hmm. We're all poor.
Yes.
So now we can't pay you, JT, and wink, wink, I happen to know no one else is mm-hmm. going to pay you because we're going to collude against every free agent this year.
Yes.
So you take what we take, what we offer, or you get nothing.
You see, here's the thing, and I know a lot of people would like to blame Klentak because he comes off as weak. Klentak, like a young general manager like Klentak, is totally at the mercy on whether an owner wants to spend money. Like, he can't go, all right, you want 23? Yeah, sure, I got it. But without calling Middleton, Middleton's the guy that's got control of this whole thing. And Middleton goes, listen, we can't afford to lose him. But there is now, I do believe that owners are now talking. Because Middleton would be the type of guy, go, this is my team, I got to take care of my team. He's one of my three most important players on the team. We can't fight it. But he is fighting it. So that's where I'm thinking it's strength in numbers now for the owners and where this game is going.
Exactly. And what that will lead to is, you're talking about the death of the game, the players will have to suck it up for mm-hmm. a year, for one bad offseason. But then that what that is, that guarantees a work stoppage. So you have fans, some fans that are mad. I believe we will all watch the games, assuming that the games happen. Then you'd have a situation where the players would be angry about the offseason, play a season angry, and then a guaranteed work stoppage. That twice in 2 in 3 years, that kind of stuff is what could derail a game. That could really do, not, I don't think baseball will ever die. That's the thing that makes baseball drop in stature. That's the thing that keeps it from being number two or three, depending on it. That kind of thing, like to be mm-hmm. number three. That's the that kind of stuff, and I think the owners are happy to do it.
All right, now let's talk about this Ian Desmond, who is a pretty good player. You know, he was a premier shortstop in this league. He's bounced around and played center field. He's supposed to play first base this year. So he's not going to play. And one of the reasons why he's not going to play is that he's just not satisfied with Major League Baseball. And he says they're failing minorities. Now, this is a really interesting topic because I've gotten a lot of emails on this lately. How come there aren't really great black players in the game anymore? What is the black participation in Major League Baseball? Like 8%? Like 8% black players. Now, there are a lot of Latinos. There's been a major influx of Latinos. But I think we can look at this sociologically. And I can only speak for myself and what my experience is in baseball. And I came from a very integrated town. So we, in Little League Baseball, my black friends were all playing Little League Baseball. And maybe even at the next level. For some reason, the guys that were pretty decent had no interest in playing baseball after. Like, I was one of five white guys on my high school basketball team. We had great athletes on that team. Our baseball coach was begging those guys to come out for baseball, and they just weren't interested in playing baseball. So I understand what Desmond is saying. There aren't very good inner city programs for baseball. And I don't know. See, I always looked at baseball like it serves more white suburban kids than it serves city kids. Because white suburban, there's organized leagues, there's a lot of facilities and fields and stuff like that. And in an inner city, there's not. Now, maybe there should be more. I know Philadelphia was trying to do something. In Chicago, they had this big campaign, and they had a great Little League team a few years ago. But I want to, like, you grew up in Pensauken. Now,
yes.
And it's a pretty mixed community, Pensauken.
Yep.
All right, so what was the baseball situation in Pensauken and at Pensauken High?
It was in the Little League, it was pretty mixed. We used to mm-hmm. go out to the games. My brother played. My brother played longer. He was a home run hitter. They wanted me to play second base because I couldn't throw. So. But anyway, it was a lot of kids. But by high school, it shifted.
Yeah.
By high school, it shifted to pretty much all white and
yes.
Spanish players.
And so I asked the question, why? Now, you can simplify it and say, like, Desmond's trying to simplify it. So we need to recruit more black players and we need to go in the inner cities and have programs. And I totally agree with that. But, like, we had those where I grew up and my black friends and black athletes in the school just weren't interested in playing baseball. So I want to, like, have a sociological discussion on why this is. And it may be, listen, There are a lot of fallacies to baseball. There really are. I mean, I love basketball more than baseball. I played much more basketball than I ever did baseball. Because it was probably more fun to play basketball. So, like, I don't know if I can tie this in sociologically, other than maybe the sport is just not as good as the other sports. Like football and basketball are more fun and exciting to play, I think.
Well, they're faster. Yeah.
Yeah, it's faster, sure. But there's more. It's more of a, like, there's a clock on it, and it's, I don't know, there's just, you're more involved in those two sports. To have baseball, you got to have stamina to play baseball. You got to be willing to be idle, to think a lot in baseball. And maybe that doesn't appeal to the majority of athletes, much less black athletes.
I don't think that's what it is.
What is it?
I think that you can't really play pickup games.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
The vast majority of inner city black kids aren't playing organized basketball or football leagues. The majority of them. But
yeah.
They play the games because you can play a pickup game. Mm-hmm. 2-on-2, 1-on-1. You can't really do that with baseball.
No, you can't.
It requires the organization.
It does, but baseball still produces a lot of players. So it's like those guys aren't playing pickup baseball games either.
Right.
They're playing in organized leagues.
Right.
And so here's where we come down to there needs to be more organized leagues to involve black athletes.
Yes, it's about 7% now. In 1984, it was up to 18.4% black athletes. So it's going down more than 10% since 84.
Yeah, so that's really interesting because all the players that I love were all black players back in the day. Like, you look at the 70s, and I still had Willie Mays, who was my favorite player. I had Reggie Jackson. I loved Reggie Jackson. And so there were a lot of black superstars back in the game. Hank Aaron, and you can go down the line. Gary Templeton, and who was the guy that stole a lot of bases for the Cardinals? Vince Coleman and Willie McGee. Guys like that for the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
There were a lot of black players back in baseball in the 70s. And, you know, Bob Gibson was obviously a great player. So what turned?
A few things. I think that the way the marketing change, I think marketing played a big role in. If you look at 1984, when that number was at 18%, it was 18% at 76. So for a long stretch, you're about 20% almost of the league is black. Around 84, you get Michael Jordan. And the marketing of the NBA changes forever going forward. And I think what it led to was a generation that sees Michael Jordan wants to be like Mike. Mm-hmm. While baseball has, we talked about this before, has not done a good job marketing their stars of any race, white, black, or Spanish. They don't do a good job marketing their stars. So there wasn't as much, I want to be like Reggie. Like, it wasn't, I want to be like Ricky Henderson. That was not marketed mm-hmm. to the level of I want to be like Mike. And I think kids, if baseball marketed the game better, I think more kids, black kids would play it. Especially if they marketed good black athletes. But they don't. But they don't just do a bad job marketing black athletes. I want to make that very clear. I think baseball does a poor job marketing athletes.
I want to discuss this with, like, what of the athletes that you, when you grew up as an athlete and you didn't choose baseball, why did you not choose baseball? Because I think it's another factor. Like, if you look at baseball, like kids that have stars in their eyes and are great in a particular sport, look at the rewards of that particular sport. Like, if you're a great football player, the first reward is you get a scholarship at a major college to play, and then you go to the NFL, and you can see that progression. And it's the same thing in basketball. In baseball, if you're really good, there's still no guarantee that you're going to make any money at all. Like, there's a hundred different, like, you could be a really good baseball player and try to go down that avenue, and for 10 years, you could spin your wheels and not make 3 cents.
And that's a socioeconomic thing. If your parents are very poor and you're toiling mm-hmm. and you can't help them versus if you play basketball, where even if you're a bust, you can get them out of poverty, you can mm-hmm. get them a house, you can get them something. Or same with the NFL. Even if you're a bust, if you get that signing bonus on that one contract, you'll be richer than your whole family combined versus a maybe. That absolutely plays a role. So society has to play a role.
Yeah, there are fewer baseball scholarships available than football and basketball. Except, the Florida States and the Oklahoma States and all of those major programs down south will have a lot of scholarships. But most colleges that have baseball programs are only giving out like 5 scholarships or whatever. So, like, that's a major factor too. But it might be that the game is just inferior. It might be, like, in this day and age, we are so used to quick. We got to have it right now. Society has changed that way. Baseball doesn't appeal to a lot of people for that reason.
I think that the positions are so specialized, too. And you kind of have, you really have to find a position, hone in on it, and then the repetition and the practice that it takes to be really, really, really good at that position. And then, like Ty said, finding your team and finding an organization. I feel like for a lot of the inner city kids, it's who is attending to them to really work with these kids to become good at baseball, because the funding for the rec department in Philadelphia, you know, just in my personal experience and growing up here and seeing it, they lost a ton of funding over the year. The leagues were dismantled. There was nobody who wanted to step up and coach teams in the city. So unless there was, you know, a good team and a lot of funding towards it, and the people were dedicated to making it happen and working with these kids, I don't think that there was really a chance for baseball.
And it's certainly a major factor. Yeah. I can just go by, like, my experiences. I used to go, dude, you're a really good little league baseball player. You know how to play baseball. Come on. I'll, like, be part of the varsity team. And they would go, eh. Yeah, I have interest. You can help us out. Didn't have any interest. All right, we'll talk about it. 610-632-0975 is how you get in. It's the Mike Missinelli Show back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
It's 2 o'clock hour of the Mike Missinelli Show. Brian Boucher will join us at 3:30 as we relive the five overtime game that he played in as part of a new venture, NBC Sports Regional Networks, and a big podcast they're planning. And we'll tell you a little more about that as we go along. And this is going to be a day also of lists. I got a bunch of lists in my head. And one of the lists I'm going to play out soon is it's a where did we go wrong list. I'm coming up with the five things where each organization went wrong to the point where it left a stain.
Is there a time frame for, you know?
Well, it's got to be in your lifetime that you recognize. Like, okay. I'm not going to go back in time. Like my number one. The Eagles, if I'm going number one, where do we go wrong? It was the T.O. situation.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So, like, along those lines, that messed up a team.
Okay.
Where you went wrong. They made a decision. It turned out wrong. We went wrong.
There's quite a few.
There's a ton of them. All right, let's go to Ian in Newark. I forgot to do our Twitter poll. We got to start a Twitter poll now. And 2 o'clock, I mean, man, I'm racing to the phones today. 2 o'clock hours brought to us by Ferguson HVAC Line Conklin. Attention HVAC contractors, visit Ferguson's county location on North 7th Street in Philadelphia today for equipment, parts, and supplies for every heating and cooling job. And the Twitter poll brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons. If you need new outdoor power equipment, Paul B. Moyer and Sons is the place to go. They're in Doylestown. You can order online at paulbmoyer.com or just give them a call. They have safe contactless pickup. Natalie Eganoff.
Thanks, Mike. Today's poll, over 200 votes on this one early. Are you confident the Phillies and JT Realmuto will come to an agreement? 45% say yes, 55% say no.
All righty. So, JT is not the most popular Philly. He's a solid, good player. He's like Utley Light to the fan base.
Yeah, because he doesn't say much.
Doesn't say much, just, you know, goes about his business.
Yeah. What they gave up to get him has to play a role in it, too.
Yeah, it does. They can't possibly lose him. They know that. And they're just playing a game now with the agent, because the agent's going to go. They hope that the agent goes around the league and goes, you guys interested? Yeah, we are, but, you know, 23, we can't do it right now, Holmes. So that's that tacit agreement of collusion that you may see with this whole thing now.
I think you're going to see it with a lot of players. In the offseason, you know, there just wasn't, we didn't want to give up a draft pick. Oh, this is a whole bunch of reasons why they're not paying some 27-year-old in their prime. That's why, as bad as the players are, and they're always bad, the owners are almost always worse. They just are.
Yeah, well, it's true. All right, let's go Ian in Newark. Ian, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Ian?
Hey, what's up, Mike? You know, I called a couple weeks ago. I said I'd never go to a baseball game again because of strike. I would go tonight if I was allowed to.
Yeah.
You were right about that.
Because you need it.
Yeah,
you need to go.
I'll say this. I called it because I was mad about the strike, but if there was a game tonight, I would go.
Of course you would.
Yeah, you were right about that because I was in a bad mind frame. So I'll give you that, okay? So now, I wouldn't bring my sons to the game because nowadays kids just get so bored from it. So I was actually just talking about this. The biggest problem with baseball now, Mike, is they don't have guys like Ken Griffey, Frank Thomas, Ryan Howard. My favorite player of all time was Jimmy Rollins. We don't have that anymore, man. That's why baseball, I don't know what you can do to fix it because I play basketball, a lot of African-Americans. They always say this, Mike, the game is just too boring for them. Like, that's the biggest problem. So, now, I don't think baseball is dying, but it is slowly dying if we don't get guys like that back in the game. Because you go to a Phillies game, you see like less than 10 African-Americans there.
I don't know. Philly fans, I think African-American fans come out. Tyrone, do you know, when you look at the stand, I see a lot of African-American fans at Philly's games.
Yeah.
Yeah, they come to the games.
I'm telling you, this is my point, though. The baseball is the only sport, this is why I disagree, we argued about this before, baseball is the only sport that has not involved, has not changed any rules. Like, where I'm saying, they got to adjust to people because there's a study out there, our attention spans are 16 minutes an hour.
You can't give me an example. See, a lot of people say this. Do you change the game to make it more exciting? It's not a game that you can make more exciting.
You can, Mike. I love baseball.
You can't.
I think you can, though.
How? Give me something.
The analytics is, this is not even debatable, but the analytics have killed the game right now. So when I take my son, when I go watch the game, my son's like, why are there six people on right field? What you can do, there's just too many strikeouts now. This is my theory. What you can do is you can move the mound down a little bit, back the fences up a little bit, and create more action. It's not going to happen. But
people want to see the home run. They don't want to see the action.
But look at this, Mike. The Bryce Harper comes up, right? Their shift kills him. So that's why I disagree with the contract.
If you outlaw the shift, the game would be better. What? I don't understand that. I don't understand that argument. The game is what it is. If you don't like it in its form, you don't like it. You can't jazz up baseball to make it as spiffy and as quick and as electric as other sports. You just can't. It is what it is. How long is shift? Is it not going to make that big of a difference? Lowering the mound, Mike. Lowering the mound, it'll be more hits. But we have home runs coming out of the wazoo right now.
Yeah, they still tell everybody to uppercut the swing and try to hit a home run anyway. Even if they lowered the mound, it's not like they would put more balls in play.
Either you like it or you don't. And fans like it because they like it on a different level than they like other sports. They like it because it's a nice, relaxing time to go out and see it. Now, on TV, I don't know. Do they like it on TV? It's more fun to go to the ballpark than it probably is to watch it on TV. I will allow for that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I watch it on TV all the time. I like the pace of it.
So it's interesting because I find sometimes I love watching it at the ballpark, but I'm more engaged and more informed when you watch it on TV. You know, because you're paying attention and you're getting to see the angles of everything.
Right.
So I think if you can hone in on it like that, then it would be more enjoyable. But people just don't want to take the time to pay attention.
No, let's look at
the opposite on that, too.
What?
Baseball's the only sport that I far prefer being there than TV.
Yeah.
Football, I want my replays. I don't want to be cold. Basketball, I want the replays in a different angle.
Right, because the idle time when you're at the ballpark is idle time that feels okay.
Yeah.
Because there's a, you smell, there's smells and there's, you know, activities, watch people.
Right.
But when you're at home, it feels like it drones on.
I end up watching baseball with, I find myself not on purpose watching the Phillies and
right.
this sitcom, yeah. this movie, this yeah. other baseball game.
Yes.
I don't do that with the other sports. Now, hockey, I also prefer to be there than to watch on TV, but not to the level of yeah. baseball.
But hockey, I will say, hockey's damn exciting, more exciting than baseball on TV, too.
It's oh, just, yeah.
Sometimes yes. your eyes play tricks on you where the puck is, but it's still, the action of it keeps you there in the TV. The action in baseball, you got a lot of the time. I guess I'll go to the bathroom now.
Yeah.
I guess I'll walk to the refrigerator and get something.
Right.
You know, that, and it's tough to kill that idle time. I mean, at the ballpark, the idle time is part of the ambiance.
I love it. I actually enjoy yeah. that downtime. You can talk to the person next to you. Oh, mm-hmm. get a drink or whatever, something, popcorn, whatever you're going to get, the peanuts, whatever it is. That's all yeah. part of the deal.
Now, here's the thing. That people hate the word analytics. But when you think about what you hate about analytics, let's just take what he brought up, the shift. Now, the shift is born from studying a pattern on where a guy hits the ball most. So if a guy is more of a pull hitter, you'd be a damn fool not to do the shift, right? So, like, that's analytics that gives you an advantage in your study of the game. So why would that be bad?
Well, I have a question. Do you think it's getting to the point where it's more complex for just the average casual baseball viewer to understand? Because when you go to a game, now the board has all the advanced analytics on there and all, you know, the different subsets of it. And I just wonder if you're a casual baseball viewer, you're, you know, and you want to learn more about the game, now it's not just the ball game. Now you have to hone in on certain things.
You don't have to.
Well, no, you don't have to, but you know, I feel like
it's there for your perusal. If you want to use it, here's what bugs people about the shift. Their guy hits the ball hard and second baseman's playing short right field and he scoops and throws the guy out. They don't like that.
Right.
Because that should have been a hit. But the other team has adapted. The other team goes, this is where you hit it, dude. You
right.
know? So that's what the shift is. It's just like basketball. Eric Spoelstra throws the zone on the Sixers. It's like there's a strategy to that. That's analytical.
It is. One thing baseball could do on the TV, stop with just batting average, home run, RBIs. Mm-hmm. Like we're past that with baseball.
Yeah.
Put it on the screen. Right away, in general, that's everybody. Like some of those advanced metrics.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, if you're a kid and you're watching baseball for the first time with your parents, you'll see OPS, mm-hmm. slugging. All that to me should be part of the package rather than just the old school
yeah.
batting average or home run mm-hmm. RBI.
Yeah.
That's yeah. probably passe.
Yeah.
Yet TV, for the most part, still presents it that way when everybody who's a quote expert in the game has moved past that. So present it to the people mm-hmm. past it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like that's something that could be adjusted.
Yeah, I get it. I want to know from black men who did not choose baseball why you did not. Now, there's a lot of sociological reasons for that. And one of them is with baseball now, you almost have to be a wealthy parent to like it's almost like hockey where the travel teams, that's out of your pocket. In the basketball AAU teams, you usually got sponsors that come in and make it easier for those kids to travel around. Baseball is like a commitment where you got the parents have to put a lot of money in to pay for those travel leagues.
Yeah, and then that becomes you're pricing out some of your better athletes. The same thing happens in soccer. Overseas, if you're LeBron James in Madrid, Spain, mm-hmm. they will pay for you from the time they discover you're 6-8-year-old LeBron
yeah.
through. They're cutting the checks. Here, if LeBron James had wanted to play soccer, there's no way his mom, being the single parent, would have been able to afford to play the game.
Right.
Same kind of goes with baseball. So mm-hmm. you're taking out a bunch of athletes where, okay, my mom could somehow take out a mortgage when she doesn't have a house, some sort of loan to let me play. Or this coach will make sure I have sneakers, a jersey, and can get to every game if I play this sport. That's hard to quantify, but it's got to be a big chunk of some of the better athletes,
it
right?
It is. The travel leagues went around when I was around. So I just played every sport. That's all we did. That's all we had. So, like, you know, we didn't have an embarrassment of riches and resources. So you played baseball, then you played basketball, then you played football. That's all we did. I didn't play golf. There's no golf when I grew up.
Right.
So, like, baseball, I started, we had the leagues. We had the minor league, which was, and I was so excited to play baseball that I got my father to lie about my age to join the league.
To play up.
Well, I wasn't supposed to join until I was 8.
Oh, were you like the cutoff?
So you're 7.
I was 7.
And your dad, yeah.
So I got, and he was against it. And I like carried on it because I was going to be the small fit. I was like real, you know, smaller than everybody at 7.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get involved in it. You know, mm-hmm. The kids were older, man. I wanted to play. So that's why it just went from that to the Little League, to Babe Ruth League, to the American Legion League, the high school, and the college. It just flowed that way for me, because that's all I knew.
Yeah.
But we didn't have great resources.
No. And
we didn't have travel leagues.
Right. And I think, but again, there were people who were dedicated to keeping it going, to keeping the leagues going.
Yeah, we had a lot of older guys that coached for years. Like, when I look back, I go, those guys dedicated their heart. Like, they didn't have kids anymore that were playing. They just coached forever. You know, these old school dudes.
Yeah.
So that's what I learned. I learned old school principles.
Yeah.
From these guys.
Funny you say that. My dad coached for a long time, but I remember when we first started, Coach Ken and Coach Brian, if you're, Coach Brian's no longer with us, Coach Ken, if you're around or watching, all right, thank you. His kids were like younger and older. He like had older kids, stopped having kids, and then ended up having a younger kid. The point was, he wore his championship ring from previous years and would show us he had no reason to still be coaching.
Yeah, those guys had a dedication to the community.
Yeah, for sure.
And you don't see that anymore because the communities are more transient and in two jobs or whatever. But the old school guys are gone from baseball. Like the old, you know, there's this guy in, it's that Legion that's good in Jersey. The Legion, they always play for the championship.
I'll look
that,
it up. Yeah.
That program, that guy was there for like 50 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Brooklawn. It was Brooklawn.
Investing in it.
Right. All right, let's go to Grant in Norristown. Grant, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Grant.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
What's up, Grant?
I'm doing pretty good. Just got out of jail today, but...
You got out of jail?
Yeah, just got out of jail.
What'd you do? What'd you get out? How long did you serve, man?
Over a year.
What'd you do?
Stalking and harassment.
You do what?
Stalking and harassment.
Stalking and harassment. Well, did you learn your lesson?
Yep.
All right. You got it together now?
Yeah, I got it together now, definitely.
All right. You got you get a job? How are things going? You got a good living situation?
Yeah, I got a great living situation.
All right, cool.
I'm okay.
All right, well, welcome back into society, man. Take care of yourself.
Yeah. Well, you think we're going to sign Romito or no?
Yes, I think they are. It would be a disaster if they didn't, and they know it. And so do the agent. The agent knows it, too. I just think they're trying to hold the price down. They're trying to get the agent to set to see that the market is not going to be as good as he thinks he is, and then they'll come running back to them.
I'm sorry, I would probably kept a sale, but I'm not sure if they are able to do that or not.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you, Grant.
Hunter, I would have kept Alfaro.
Alfaro? Yeah, they traded Alfaro. Alfaro is just, he's a mediocre player, though. That's no big loss.
I don't know, I like him. I thought he was a good prospect.
Yeah. He's slower than you.
Yeah.
No, he's okay player. He's, you know, Real Muto is a much better catcher as far as a franchise catcher. And the Phillies, they know that. I mean, they're just playing a game right now. And if they find out that somebody is willing, see, I think they have a security blanket knowing that no owner is going to give big money for that. So they're daring the agent to go around, and he's going to find out that nobody wants to pay over that kind of money. So they come right back to the Phillies. And if somebody does, the Phillies can just outbid them to keep them.
Absolutely. I mean, we need them. We definitely need them. If we lose them, it's a big loss. Huge loss.
Yeah, it's because they don't have anybody in their system. They don't have an up-and-coming catcher. They don't have an up-and-coming anything, to be honest with you.
I think they do have a catcher they like.
Do?
It's like a couple years away, yeah. There's a catcher that they like. He wouldn't be able to. There is a catcher that they like.
It's not Davey Grion. It's another guy.
Another guy,
right. Well, okay.
But, I mean, that's still, I'm just...
This guy is a very unique player in that he's a hitting catcher, with speed.
Yes.
So he's got a lot of unique. Is that, so you would be a stone idiot to let that guy get away.
There are people.
So they're just playing a game.
But let me let you respond before we go to break, because it's out there from baseball people. He's caught so many games before the age of 30. If you compare Ruiz,
he's worn out.
He'll be worn out, so the contract will be bad as one. And two, yes, he's the best catcher in baseball, but relative to best catchers in baseball, he's the worst one in a long time. So they're saying he's the best of a crop that's not that good. There are baseball guys making those two arguments.
All right. I mean, they're decent arguments. He's 29.
700 games he's already caught. It's a lot of games, I will admit.
Listen, I'll do a four-year contract with him at $23 million in a heartbeat.
Yeah, 4 years, because he's 33.
To be honest, and I think that's really the best they're going to be able to get anyway. And I think the Phillies know it. All right, 610-632-0975 is how you get in. Mike Missinelli Show, and we're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
3 o'clock hour. We're going to start this. Where did we go wrong? In the top five lists that I'm trying to compile here. I got a really good Eagles list. I think it's impenetrable. Decent Sixers list, too. Flyers have been a little tougher. Phillies, you can come up with real easy ones. And this idea came to me because the other day I was on the road and this car passed me on the left on the Lake City Expressway. And it was a Ford Mustang.
Okay.
And I go, you know, that's probably one of the five most iconic cars of my lifetime.
Yeah.
So I started to pile a list in my head, and I only got three strong. Like the Corvette, the Mustang, the Beetle. Can I agree with the Beetle?
No, I'm agreeing with the Beetle.
So, and then I don't have four and five. Because I couldn't think of another.
The Camaro.
Oh, yes.
The Camaro goes with the Mustang. They kind of
like, yeah, I did think about the Camaro. All right, now the fifth one, because I started to go through, like, you can't really go far. And was there, like, an iconic, like, Toyota was really the first Japanese dealer that infiltrated America, right? Do they have an iconic car? Is the Corolla iconic?
I mean, the Camry's kind of iconic.
The Camry kind
of
is.
Because of its lack of depreciation.
The Porsche 911. That's particular.
I was
going to
say Porsche. Yeah,
that Porsche 911 was.
Yeah, but that's like a car that was only for a certain group of people. Like I'm talking about, like kind of a car that you would see across America. Like the Porsche 911 was in some rich guy's driveway garage. You know, like yeah. I was trying to think of there wouldn't be another iconic General Motors car because like how about a
you know which one it kind of is the Ford F-150.
The truck?
In your lifetime,
it
went from nothing to the number one selling vehicle in the world.
I thought about that, but I didn't want to go truck. I was just kind of staying with the car. Let me ask you this. Would the Thunderbird be iconic enough as a Ford?
The T-Bird.
I mean, it's one of those cars that you always look twice at. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you stop.
It's gone, though, now.
Right.
It's, like, phased out. Yeah. So did that reach iconic status? What about the Crown Vic?
I love the Crown Vics.
It's the cop car. Crown Vics are cop cars.
They
were cop cars.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
How about, is there an iconic Cadillac? There's not an iconic Buick. Is there an iconic Pontiac?
The GTO.
Yeah, I was thinking of the GTO.
GTO was pretty, GTO was iconic.
Yeah.
It's time.
GTO would probably apply.
Yeah.
Is there an iconic Dodge or Plymouth? I couldn't think of anything that would reach that kind of status. So
the Trans Am
over the GTO, or is that too much like the Camaro? That was like the imitation Camaro, wasn't it? The Camaro was first. The Trans Am kind of like sucked on that draft.
I get you. Yeah,
so I eliminated that. The GTO I thought about. Would the GTO go above the Trans Am?
I don't know.
So the Corvette, Mustang, Beetle, Camaro, GTO is the list so far. We can always like, kind of like the El Dorado.
It's a big car in its day. And it made a lot of people copy. There's a lot of people that think, there was actually an article about this I saw not that long ago that saying that the same company as Dodge, the Jeep Caravan.
Yeah, I thought about the Jeep, the Wagoneer, or whatever, the Cherokee. The Cherokee wasn't the first one though. The Jeep that came. What was the Jeep that came out that had the like the box Jeep that had the canvas that you took off? What was that?
What model was that?
That was the Wrangler.
That was the Wrangler.
Yeah, there are people that think that really pushed things forward.
Yeah,
to where because the SUVs are so popular now, that was sort of like the OG.
Yes, the Wrangler. The Wrangler is a contender.
Yeah, it's. And then there's a bunch of people that think that you have to put that car that we all hate being behind.
The Prius?
Yes. Because,
yeah.
Because the reason is so many copycats came from it, the electric thing, and all them things are still on the road. So that, and they were also mentioned, like, Tesla doesn't exist if you don't get the Prius.
Oh, for sure.
Like, the Prius made a bunch of stuff happen, even though we don't love it.
I get it. I hate it, but... I thought about the Prius. The only thing I thought about, that's like an ultra liberal type of pocket of people.
Yes, but
like it didn't cross over to everybody.
But Tesla is a super cool car, and no way Tesla exists.
I get it. I see the impact of it. I'm just saying, like, be iconic. It has to cut across all America. The Prius didn't cut across all America.
No,
it cut across. You know, it's that that Whole Food type
and,
of
and it's really just cities. You don't really drive it in suburbs. I'm about suburbs, sir. You drive in Marlton because you're near Philly. I'm saying you don't drive it in rural areas. There's no point.
Sometimes they're in the left lane on 76, that's
just
for sure.
Going 40. And just oblivious to any other cars being on the road. I guess that's part of driving one of those things.
It sure is.
Oblivious. Right, so anyway, it's just a throwaway. The thing that I thought about as I was driving, seeing that Mustang. Patrick in Jersey. Patrick, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Patrick.
How are you?
What's up, Pat?
You kind of brought up what I wanted to talk about, how little leagues are dying out.
I don't think little leagues are dying out. They're all over the suburb.
Not the little leagues. The town balls still have the little leagues. But once you hit 13 years old, you have to be on a traveling team. And these traveling teams cost $3,000 a year.
Yeah, they're expensive. If you know, so you're saying like the Babe Ruth program has been cut out of most communities, because that was what followed Little League.
Yeah, well, like you had said, when I grew up, we had Little League, and then
it was a Babe Ruth league, and American Legion in summer,
American Legion in high school, and,
right.
But today, my grandson plays town ball, and he also plays on a traveling team.
Yeah, travel teams are expensive. Yeah, I know what you're saying. And a lot of people don't, you know, want to go through that aggravation.
And they got to buy their own helmet. And they have to buy their own bats.
Mm-hmm.
And these bats are $150. The gloves are expensive.
See, this is where baseball can make an impact. Because you're talking about rich teams that can foster those kind of programs to increase baseball participation.
Yeah, really. Really?
All right, man.
All right.
What else you got?
And the GTO, any car that had a song named after it should be your
top
five.
Yeah, the Beach Boys went GTO a lot, didn't they?
Yeah. GTO is belong. Somebody does bring up the Ford Bronco. Should be in the mix in consideration.
Truck, though. Semi-truck.
Semi-truck.
Yeah, it's a different, like, category.
Crossover? Is it a crossover?
No, it's just
it's a smaller SUV.
It's a small SUV. Yeah. Like it was like the first kind of small SUV that came out. And then Chevy had a, what was the Chevy?
I don't know.
Yeah, Chevy had like a Bronco type car back in the day. The Blazer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the Blazer spawned the Tahoe and the Suburban.
Which are basically boats.
That happens right before, they got really popular right before gas got really expensive.
Yeah.
So there were people with a lot of,
right.
I mean.
The Hummer, what about the Hummer?
That was basically just a copy off the Hummer was.
Very specialty car, though.
Yeah.
And they copied. You know, I'm looking at like, the common man cut swath around through Americana car.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. 6-1. There's like top five cars. People.
A lot of cars.
Want to participate in the car conversation.
I think there's a big, if you do the Venn diagram of sports fans and car guys.
Yeah.
Not every sports guy is a car guy, but most car guys are sports guys.
Yeah.
Or girl. I don't really know what sports girls are into. So I'm not leaving them out on purpose. I don't know what I know there are, I mean, the car girls. I don't know what else they're into. Like, personally.
I'm a sports girl, and I actually do. I really like cars. I like paying attention to cars. I like learning about cars. That's why I have a pretty good general knowledge of cars.
Can you trace your family's car history?
Oh, 1,000%.
All right. God, what was your family's car history?
So, well, my dad always had Buicks.
Uh-huh.
He would always drive a Buick, and then he had, I think at one point he had a Dodge.
Uh-huh.
A Dodge something, which was weird. Then he had a Chrysler. Now he drives a Nissan. My mom drives a Nissan, and she's been in Nissans and Hyundais for the last like 20 years.
Okay. All right. I gotcha. So, Tyrone, what was your family's history?
It was a Chevy Equinox most recently.
When you were a little kid.
Growing
up, the family's history of cars.
It was somewhere in there. There was a Plymouth early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It moved over to, my mom had a Ford Escort and my dad had a Dodge. I forget what it was, like a regular Dodge sedan.
Uh-huh.
Then after that, my mom still had the Escort because it lasted a long time. And my dad got the big van, the big Dodge, like crossover van.
Uh-huh.
It had the big, like captain seats.
Yeah.
And he kept that for a long time and then went to the Chevy Equinox.
Okay.
And then his car was like a Ford, whatever, for work.
All right. So, My dad was a Chevy man.
All the way through.
And somehow had a midlife shift.
Okay.
And I could never figure it out why. So he went black Impala.
Oh.
Blue Impala. Greenish Caprice. The Caprice. Remember the Caprice?
When I was really little, before I could remember, I think my dad had a Caprice back in the day.
Yes.
That was very familiar.
The Caprice was the step up for the Impala.
Okay.
And then somehow Plymouth came into the view, and he went Plymouth Duster.
Oh, he went with Duster. That's a popular car.
But they had an electronic ignition that always messed up.
Ooh,
like it was a different ignition. It was you heard something like a sound, like something kicking in, like some electric jolt kicking in before it started, and that car was a mess for the entire family.
Oh,
and then he went Chevrolet Vega.
Ooh.
He went eco during the gas crisis.
Oh, look at that. That's a clutch move by him.
That's nice.
That thing was a piece of crap, too. It had like an aluminum block engine. It was a mess. All right, 610-632-0975. Back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.